Historic flooding on the Mississippi River.
The Army Corps of Engineers destroys farms in order to save cities.
Marketplace Midday Update is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Hello, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for checking out the podcast from Marketplace.org. Today is Tuesday, the third day of May.
Coming up, we'll check in with the area that's being flooded in order to save places like Cairo, Illinois.
Also, the most popular social networking site in China goes public.
And a Spanish gym desperate for customers. Bears it all, Steve.
Oh, boy. Those stories and more just ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Investing, renting, sending your kid to college? Listen to the Marketplace Money Podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
Historic flooding on the Mississippi River is threatening areas in Illinois and Kentucky. But officials hope the actions by the Army Corps of Engineers, which blew a big hole in a Missouri levee, was enough to divert floodwaters away from those towns. Farmers in Missouri, though, now worry that that diversion could do them lots of harm. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer is with us, and she has the details this morning. Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning.
Why are the farmers so anxious about this?
Well, Steve, they're worried their farmland will be flooded. In fact, some Missouri farmers went all the way to the Supreme Court in an effort to stop the Army Corps. They obviously failed. Now they're watching land that in some cases has been farmed by the same family for 100 years be flooded. I talked to Carlin Bennett. He's a county commissioner in Mississippi County, Missouri. He says the farmland will be damaged permanently.
You have some of the richest farmland in the world that is probably now going to be covered in between 6 and 10 foot of river sand. And of course, that will make that ground unusable forever, probably.
And Steve Bennett says the intentional flooding by the Corps will cause at least $300 million worth of damage.
What would have happened, Nancy, if the Corps didn't do this?
Well, that's the crux of the issue here. Several towns in Illinois and Kentucky could have been inundated with floodwaters, damaging homes and maybe risking lives. One of the towns the Corps is hoping to save is Cairo, Illinois. It's home to 2,800 people. But the farmers back in Missouri had argued there's no guarantee the Army Corps' plan to save these towns will work. The Corps says it had no choice. The Mississippi River hasn't risen this high since 1927.
Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer in Washington for us. Nancy, thanks.
You're welcome.
Now let's go to someone in the area of Missouri that's being affected by this move by the Army Corps of Engineers. Hubert DeLay is the county clerk in Mississippi County, Missouri, and he joins us now. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Well, tell us about this blast that happened last night.
We weren't expecting the explosion to be so large. In fact, just a few minutes after the explosion took place, our house started shaking. Our windows started rattling. It felt like a 7.5 magnitude earthquake. It was tremendous.
And is there water pouring in now from that exploded levee?
Yes. The Ohio River has dropped about 1 foot.
What are the economic consequences for the farmers who live there?
Well, the economic consequences will be dire for the farmers, and not only for the farmers, for our entire county. Not only will the farmers lose their crops and all that are already in there and probably won't be able to put a crop in, but that's going to have a ripple effect on the rest of our county because agriculture is the lifeblood of our local economy here.
The Army Corps is doing this, it says, because it wants to prevent worse problems. Do you think that they're making the right decision here?
Well, that remains to be seen. Of course, the Corps maintains that this is a flood of historic proportions, and they ensure us that the system had to be operated the way it was in order to relieve pressure both upriver and downriver.
Hubert DeLay is the county clerk in Mississippi County, Missouri, which is dealing with the effects of an explosion of the levee there. Mr. DeLay, thank you so much for talking with us, and good luck.
You're most welcome, and thank you very much.
Well, members of Congress are back in Washington this week, and Osama bin Laden's death aside, lawmakers have some pretty big issues to deal with, from budgets to deficits to, of course, the skyrocketing gas prices.
And then, Steve, there's an issue that doesn't seem all that big in comparison, but it's getting a lot of attention in Washington because of a huge lobbying campaign by banks and retailers. I'm talking about the new federal regulations on swipe fees for debit cards. Our Washington Bureau Chief John Dimsdale explains.
At Congress's request, the Federal Reserve is proposing to limit the fees banks charge merchants when customers swipe their debit cards.
There's a lot of money on the line here.
That's Georgetown University finance professor James Angel. He says nothing focuses the mind like the $14 billion that the regulation could swipe away. So banks have hired more than 100 lobbyists to persuade Congress to scrap the limits on debit card charges. Income, they say, subsidizes other bank services.
The banks are going, we have to charge more for checking accounts.
The banks have attracted some surprising allies, says George Mason University professor Todd Zawicki.
Groups like the NAACP have noted that if you start getting rid of free checking, that's going to drive a lot of people out of the banking system.
Meantime, the 100-plus lobbyists for retailers say caps on debit card fees mean cheaper prices in stores. Either way, consumers will have to pay up. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
More recall news this morning. Honda says it's calling back more than 800,000 cars, including 2001 to 2003 Civics and CRVs for faulty airbags. Well, this news we're covering today, the U.S. Attorney's Office filed suit this morning against Deutsche Bank. The government claims the German bank and its mortgage unit repeatedly lied so it could be included in a federal mortgage program that's insured by the government.
And for the first time in 20 years, the number of homes with television sets has dropped. The percentage has gone from 98.9% down to 96.7%. And the New York Times says poverty is one reason for the decline.
More numbers anytime at our website, marketplace.org. Just check out the numbers section.
Looking for a good read? Visit the Big Book blog at marketplace.org. Listen to author interviews and read excerpts from the Marketplace bookshelf. Online at marketplace.org/thebigbook.
Now to the Marketplace global perspective. Sony today said more personal information from its PlayStation 3 and online entertainment networks have been breached, bringing the total number of users affected around the world to more than 100 million.
Chris Green is principal technology analyst for the firm Davies Murphy. And he's with us now from London. Hi, Chris.
Hi, good morning.
What's different about this latest breach than what Sony had told us earlier?
The latest breach is slightly different from the original one that made the headlines, in that what's been compromised this time has been some old databases, some old files that Sony had lying around from 2007, rather than the current list of active users of the PlayStation Network.
Remind us what kind of information we're talking about here.
We're talking about everything from names, passwords, usernames, dates of birth, addresses, all the basic identity information that a company would hold on you.
Is this just about Sony, Chris, or are other tech and video game companies susceptible?
This isn't just a Sony issue. Any major company that's operating an online service where they have to hold information about you is potentially susceptible to the same risks, the same threats from hackers and people trying to steal information. It's just that Sony, unfortunately, has been the latest in a long line of companies to be stung.
What can consumers do to protect themselves?
The important thing to do right now is to keep an eye on things like your credit card statements and your bank statements, to make sure that none of your money is being stolen because people have got hold of your card details. If you did have a credit card registered with the PlayStation Network, it is advisable to cancel that card and have a new one issued.
Chris Green with Davies Murphy. Chris, thanks.
No problem.
Well, a Chinese site called RenRen. Have you ever heard of RenRen? That is the Chinese equivalent of Facebook, Jeremy.
No, I have not heard of it.
It's set to go public today. It's the most popular social networking site in China, and American investors are going to be able to buy a chunk of the company, even though they can't yet buy into Facebook. Marketplace China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz reports from Shanghai.
There are several social networking sites in China just as popular as RenRen, but RenRen, which means everyone in Chinese, is the first to launch an IPO. The site's founder more or less copied Facebook, added e-commerce and video games to it, and now RenRen has 117 million users. The media are calling RenRen the Facebook of China, and according to China-based tech consultant Michael Clendenin, that's the first mistake they'll make.
find out that in about a couple of months afterward, there'll be another Facebook of China. And then maybe a month after that, there'll be another Facebook of China. And they'll wake up and go, wow, I didn't realize there were so many Facebooks in China.
In fact, there's a Facebook for every demographic in China. Renren targets young people. One competitor is after yuppies. Another attracts teenagers. So when will the real Facebook enter China? Not anytime soon, says Clendenin. Facebook would look attractive to Chinese users. It has something Chinese sites don't have. It allows users to share information with a global network of friends. And that's precisely the reason China's government has banned the site. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
This week, Japan's parliament approved its first big investment to offset damage from March's earthquake and tsunami. The relief package tops $49 billion, but that is only a fraction of the hundreds of billions of dollars the disaster could cost the country and its economy when all is said and done. Marketplace's Scott Tong has more on the challenges ahead for Japan.
What the Japanese people need right now is temporary housing. 130,000 people are waiting for it, hence this first quick batch of money just 7 weeks post-disaster. The rest of the funding can wait, says Marcus Nolan at the Peterson Institute for International Economics.
It doesn't make a lot of sense to front-load spending if one is not actually in a position to spend the money.
Not in a position because the government has yet to prioritize longer-term spending, everything from new schools to ports to train tracks. And financially, the country is sagging under public debt, twice the size of its $5 trillion economy. And borrowing for reconstruction would just add to the tab. Another option is tax hikes. And a new poll suggests the Japanese are willing to play.
A majority of people are saying raise taxes to pay for this. It is quite an extraordinary consensus behind shared sacrifice.
Aside from the financial problems, there's the issue of that crippled nuclear plant at Fukushima, where 19 tons of water are still pumped in every hour to cool the damaged reactors. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Well, we've talked a lot about how the disaster in Japan has affected the automotive and electronics supply chains, but it's also been a big drag on the plane loads of tourists that Japan sends to the United States. That'll be noticeable tonight when the Seattle Mariners host the Texas Rangers. As Ann Dornfeld reports, there will probably be a lot of empty seats.
On a recent afternoon, Tatsumi Takuo and six other Japanese tourists are getting ready to board a bus for Seattle Safeco Field. They're eager to see their countryman, Mariners slugger Ichiro Suzuki.
The thing I'm looking forward to most is seeing Ichiro. We're going to baseball games all 3 days we're here.
Trip organizer Makoto Ogasawara says this group is smaller than usual. His company, Azumano International, specializes in tours for Japanese travelers and has been hit with a number of last-minute cancellations since the quake.
There may be some impact from the earthquake that may affect the tours. There may be some people in Japan who, because of the earthquake, decide not to travel.
It's bad news for Ogasawara and Seattle's economy as a whole.
Japanese have been our number one tourists for a long time.
Michael Kurtz is director of tourism for Asia with the Seattle Convention and Visitors Bureau. He says the city gets about 80,000 Japanese visitors each year. That's a lot of business for Seattle's hotel and service industries.
We've noticed now, as the effects of the quake and the aftermath have taken hold, most Japanese, they're holding back. They're not making trips.
Back in the Mariners tour group, Tatsumi Takuo says it was a tough decision for his wife and him to keep their travel plans after everything that's happened in Japan.
We decided to come because it's something that will benefit Japan in the long run by helping with Japan's economy and the travel business in both countries. And supporting Ichiro is one way of supporting Japan.
Tourism officials are hoping Japanese travel to Seattle picks up by midsummer.
Here's ball up the middle, base hit, and Ichiro.
In time for the second half of baseball season. In Seattle, I'm Ann Dornfeld for Marketplace.
And now to Spain, Steve, which has an unemployment rate of more than 21% right now. The economy's very bad. Yeah. And a lot of businesses are doing everything they can to attract customers. And when I say everything, I mean everything.
Uh-oh.
A fitness center in the Basque region of Spain is now allowing customers to exercise in the nude.
Okay.
Easy Gym says...
Is it really called Easy Gym?
I know. That's, I didn't even realize that before, but that's a good name for it. It says, working out without clothes on is natural and much more comfy. And also, by the way, they say that they're offering free towels for slippage. We'll let the listeners figure out what that means. For the first time in nearly 7 years, all of Detroit's car companies are making money. And we're expected to hear today that those companies saw a 19% boost in sales last month. Julie Neiman is an analyst with Smith Moore & Company, and she's with us now from St. Louis, as she is every Tuesday. Good morning, Julie.
Morning.
Well, I guess there's going to be some effect from the Japan earthquake and tsunami and the supply shortages in the numbers that we'll get today about auto sales. But let's just talk about the overall fundamentals. What are we seeing?
Well, it's really solid at this point. Auto sales are likely overall to rise about 16%. May and June are always the strongest months for car sales. And this is a real good indicator of early indicator of consumer demand here. Why? Because old cars, we just don't have many of them around. The whole fleet is old, but we don't have any good used cars out there because of cash for clunkers. And consumers now want fuel efficiency, environmentally friendly cars, and they do have some more income. They're a little more optimistic about their job stability here. But we've got some big problems ahead here because of the earthquake. It disrupted parts and supplies here and a shortage. Toyota's going to see their sales really plunge just as they were recovering from recalls, and they're offering big sales incentives. Detroit is probably going to try and plug in all these gaps here, which is a real positive for them. Ford's reporting first quarter up 22%. A lot of part of that was fuel efficient, small cars, very good pricing, and they had some good sales volume. Even Chrysler had the first net profit in the first 2 years here. They haven't had that in a long time. Most of theirs, those happen to be SUVs. They don't have a small car lineup. GM's going to report Thursday, but again, it's going to be the small areas. But after this, you're going to see auto sales really fall off until fall because of Toyota.
Julie Neiman, analyst at Smith Moore & Company, thanks as always.
You bet.
Since the beginning of the year, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up more than 10%. The S&P 500 up 9%. But everyone seems to be focusing on the negatives of the economy. Our colleague Stacey Vanek Smith asked Fortune magazine's Alan Sloan to differentiate the stock market from the rest of the American economy.
Well, it seems like a lot of bad news out there. We've got high gas prices, some really unimpressive growth numbers, and the Fed is going to put the brakes on the huge bond buying stimulus. But you've got some good news for us?
Yeah, the good news is anybody who owns U.S. stocks has been making tons and tons of money. I'm not really sure why, but I'm happily accepting it. The only question is, is it going to keep going on this way, or is the stock market going to get more like the economy, or will the economy get more like the stock market? These are the great magical questions.
Well, Alan, we always hear that the market isn't the same thing as the economy, of course, but the exuberance in the market does really seem especially disconnected from reality right now.
You're right. The stock market is a stock market, and it's driven by a whole lot of things, including momentum, fear. The economy is a much more rational thing, and it tends to move up and down much more slowly than the stock market tends to move up and down. This time, though, the stock market going up, at least for a while, has been good for the economy because it's added something like $9 trillion to the value of U.S. stock holdings, some of which presumably has made its way into the economy because people are taking some of that money and spending it.
Well, if the markets are doing so well, that would make people feel better about the economy and where it's headed. Could the markets potentially shock us into a recovery?
It could help. If you take people from the Fed out and get them drunk, I think they would tell you that they consider the rise in stock prices since they started buying bonds. That's one of the things they point to as a triumph. And that wealth, even though it's on paper, is clearly one of the things that's helping improve the economy.
Senior editor at large for Fortune magazine, Alan Sloan. Alan, thank you.
You're welcome, Stacey.
And finally, Jeremy, liposuction is the world's most popular plastic surgery. Hmm. Billions of dollars in income and, what, I think a half a million people, half a million surgeries per
really?
Year. Yes, it's the most popular and common plastic surgery in the country.
Okay.
But a new study published in the medical journal Obesity, which I didn't know there was such a journal, but
I haven't seen
there
that
is.
One at the supermarket yet.
No, I haven't either. Says that liposuction is not the cure-all that it's advertised to be. Huh. Researchers at the University of Colorado, for instance, found once fat is removed by the surgery, the fat just moves on and regenerates in other parts of the body. So if you take it, maybe have a tummy tuck or something like that, you take a little out of the tummy.
It'll
maybe
just show up somewhere else.
It comes back maybe in your arms or your shoulders or your thighs.
Hey.
Yeah. The good news, though, is the fat, the new fat, takes a year to find its new home. And in the meantime, you have a little time to sneak in a milkshake.
That's right. Some onion rings.
Yeah, some onion, maybe French fries. Yeah. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.